Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And, I kind of ponder whether I should really be concerned with getting things fixed nowadays, because it just seems like should I really worry about making some major, investments or repairs or anything at this point in time? Because it seems like we have really crossed over into the age of solar eclipses, solar flares, and blood red moons. And so I think, the fool is the one that ignores things, and lives the life of eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die. But this isn't a coincidence. I don't know of anybody that has really placed context of the fact that, maybe we're just far more sensitive in the electronic age with technology and so forth, but as near as I can tell, we actually had some technology. I don't remember TV stations going down, and I don't remember radio stations ever being affected by solar flares, but it seems like today they are, and it seems like today we're having such an occurrence. I mean, how many solar eclipses have we had? Total solar eclipses, I don't know, maybe the planets are coming to a point of alignment that, nobody wants to talk about. I don't get it. I do know that this is a season that we're going through, that obviously something bigger than us, fathom this, that regardless of, everything we do, as stupid as we can get in trying to save the Earth from climate change, it would only take one massive solar flare to wipe out life on this Earth. Think about that. What are we doing about that? Maybe we should be thinking about climate change for the sun. Anyway, I can't avoid, and I cannot, not say something, because there's just so much stupidity talking about this debt forgiveness and what the heck's going on. What Biden has done is an impeachable offense, actually. And so Biden's responsibility is to execute the law. He cannot create his own law. He cannot ignore the law. And what does it say right here as the third enumerated power in the Constitution? The very first responsibility delegated to our government in Article 1, Section 1, is right here. All legislative powers herein granted, in other words, all legislative powers granted within this Constitution shall be vested in a Congress of the United States. Not in the presidency, not in the court, in Congress. And so the powers given to Congress so that wasn't a general power. That was identifying the role. It was clearly articulated that the powers delegated to the federal government are in Article 1, Section 8. The very first sentence, the very first three lines, three and a half, however your font is, right? So this first part, this what I'm going to read, is the preamble. In other words, this kind of sets the tone of why the following powers are going to be granted. And at the very end of this, at the very end of the granted powers, is what is called the necessary and proper clause. It's kind of like you have a foreword and then you have a backword, or you have, back matter or whatever, your conclusion to the powers. And so As we look at the preamble, this is what it says. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, imposts, and excises. And this was modified by the 16th Amendment. The duty portion doesn't mean that the 16th Amendment took away the ability of the federal government to lay imposts as well as excises, so they can do that. But the duties tax, the direct tax, was changed to income. In other words, the process of assessing a direct tax is to be done. But here's the kicker. To pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. That's not a granting of power. This is laying down why they were given this power of taxation. But here's the clarity of taxation. But all duties imposed, so in other words, all income tax, all imposts and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. So in other words, if they're going to levy 5 cents on a bottle of liquor, it will be 5 cents on every bottle of liquor, not just liquor in one state or liquor in the rich areas of your community. It will be 5 cents attached to all. Income tax is equally tied to this uniformity clause, and nobody, ever since the 16th Amendment has been ratified, nobody has held Congress and the government to that clause. When you read the 16th Amendment, it only talks about apportionment. It only says that it is no longer tied to an apportionment of states. It doesn't mean that it can be ununiform. As a matter of fact, the concept of uniformity lends us to this whole point of student debt. Because one of the very first powers, it's actually number three, this leads to two major issues we're facing as a nation. The Congress shall have the power, because you have to start it off with every line following, every subsequent line, Congress shall have the power to. Congress shall have the power to establish an uniform rule of naturalization. In other words, they can't create an advantage for one race over another. And it seems like there is a huge advantage for people that can get across our border, and we're going to naturalize all of them. As a matter of fact, every other nationality out there in the world ought to be suing the United States government for violating their own law. It needs to be uniform. The law of naturalization must be uniform. And uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. Now, what does that mean? Uniform laws. In other words, if you're going to have debt that is non-expungible, in other words, it's not qualified for bankruptcy, then that law is applicable throughout the land. In other words, every debt you take is not, you know, you can't go into bankruptcy. It is not forgivable. You cannot expunge it. But actually, that's not the case. What happened is they created this uniform law, and then they created an exception that federal bank, or I should say the federal loans to students through education. So this was a trapping. This obviously has been a trapping. But they're violating the Constitution in doing this. And what Biden can't do is Biden can't just forgive the loan. What Biden could have done is Biden could have actually gone to Congress and actually held them to the standard of you must make all debt uniform as far as bankruptcies. In other words, you can't have these loans and not make them forgivable through bankruptcy. Bottom line, that is the only constitutional way out of the mess that this bastion, this petri dish, this actually swamp of our education system has inflicted. I mean, when we really look at, and I've heard a lot of different complaints, or if you want to call them pleas, from young kids today. And because they're ignorant on the Constitution, they have no idea. They just don't understand what the heck's going on. And they're saying, oh, and this is the common sentiment. I mean, I see parents concern for their kids because their kids will never be able to own a home. Well, why is that? It is because our government is waging warfare against us. They're allowing people to come in. Let me just ask you this. What is the value of your home right now? It's way overpriced. And why is that? Why is it way overpriced? It's because if you remove the occupants of one out of every six homes in your community, then you will actually have a crash. The bubble will break in your housing market because what will end up happening is you will now have an excess of inventory and your house value will drop like a rock. Now, so here's the question for all these parents that are really concerned about their kids. Oh, you know, my kids won't be able to buy a home, but are you willing to lose the value in your home so that we can actually correct this nation? Are you willing to actually change the cost of living back down to a manageable amount of money to where we don't have a fiat currency? I mean, it takes a while to correct things, but, and I'm serious, it's going to take a little while to correct things. But when we're through with all of this, we will have a stable economy that the government will never be able to manipulate again. Because bottom line, show me in these enumerated powers where Congress shall have the authority to regulate our economy. What they have is the next power. Congress shall have the power to coin money, regulate the value of the money. And how do they do that? It's by putting more gold and silver into circulation or reducing it. But that's it. That's how you regulate money. That's how you regulate the inflation of your currency. But when you start playing with and manipulating markets to where you create an excessive demand, like letting 50 million people come into your nation and then saying that they're entitled to housing and then paying for their housing and ignoring other people. I mean, this is why we're seeing this civil war, this uprising. And I just say it's an uprising of illiteracy. I could say it's an uprising of stupidity, but people would take offense. When your government is doing things that they have no constitutional authority to do, then what do you get? And bottom line, this is one of the huge reasons why for the past couple of Fridays, I have been going through how it is the party system, that has made it possible for the ratcheting of tyranny to be successful in America. The reason we are controlled to the nth degree and we're about ready to be baked. And I mean, we put a fork in us, we're almost done. So what are we going to do? You either start standing up and demanding every public servant turn their back on the parties and face the Constitution and only support the Constitution. Stop this idea that because you're a part of a political party, you and your opposing party can compromise away our liberties. You have no authority to do that. No person in public service, not even the president, can violate their oath of office. We have to hold them accountable. That's the whole point of what we're doing. And as a matter of fact, people are getting this. And, you know, surprise, surprise, people in New York are getting this. And they're starting to wake up. This actually, you know, as much as you can look at the circumstances of the day, and it's easy to get caught up in the negative, and we're doomed, we're going to fail, you know, that I always hear that voice, and it just comes to me, Oliver Travel. There's this one guy, Oliver Travels, the movie, and there's this one guy. This is an old, I think it's a black and white movie. It's that old. But there's this guy in the background that you always hear say, we're never going to make it. It'll never work. You know, that type of thing. Like Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh. There's always that guy. But why is it that there's so many people that have become that guy? So many people, because when everything you know is not working, then all seems lost. Folks, let me introduce you to the Constitution, because right here, and I hate the little cliche, the Constitution is the solution. I hate to say that. Because it just used to embroil me when I heard people just say that, but they didn't even know. And I'd say, well, how is it? Well, read it. And they go, well, how is it the solution? What specifically? And they couldn't put a finger on it. And I'm telling you, by its form itself, that the fact that it is a compact, that it is a compact for the states, that the states are the superior body in this whole process, that they have the superiority over the federal government, over all things not delegated in that compact, that they can force the federal government into compliance. Ah, but we've let the federal government get so far out of bounds that we can't do anything about it. I'm here to tell you, we still have all of the power in this Constitution, and only a divine creator, only a divine God that loves us would have given us everything we needed in this one little document to actually hold our public servants accountable. This is why, folks, they take a legally binding oath to support that Constitution, and we have a mechanism to hold them accountable. The problem is the third dot. The first dot's the oath. The second dot is holding them accountable. When they wander, they do something, they have no authority, and they just ignore us. Well, the third dot is the 14th Amendment. You know, all these people that are telling you these evil things about that 14th Amendment? Section 3 right there. All we have to do is demand that the Constitution be enforced. And the only way we can do that is by cleaning up our counties. That means that we have to step into the county positions, and we actually have to start holding our state government accountable. And we actually have to start electing people that will actually hold themselves accountable and hold others accountable. Maybe we need Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Maybe we need that. Can we find them? I think they exist. I think that there's enough people that are still getting on their knees at night and in the morning and praying to the Almighty. I think there's plenty of people. It's just that we've become so ignorant and so lost, we think we're doomed. You know, take a break, folks. Don't stop reading the scriptures, but take a break and read this divine document of how the Lord wants us to govern ourselves. You know, if the government is the problem, you know, maybe it would help to read that one document he gave us. It is so important. And it is so significant in a spiritual realm that I believe it's either Isaiah or Ezekiel, where it talks about in the last days, these righteous men, prophets, what have you, the righteous will speak to us from the dust. And that's what's happening with our own very government, because our framers are speaking with us or to us through that dust. And those who believe that those men were, you know, were racist and so forth, those men were brave enough to actually cast off slavery. They tried everything they could, but they recognized that they needed to maintain the Union at that point in time, which is why, and I go through this all the time, folks. I go through why slavery, based on this Constitution, if you want to know this answers to all of these things, listen to my entire reading of the Constitution with Paul Venable last year. It started, I think, on September 19th, and we went through 40-some hours of reading and explaining how this all laid out. Bottom line, when we're looking at what the heck's going on and getting back to Biden, Biden has committed an impeachable offense. He has basically ignored the law, created his own law, and is now literally, he is now guilty of buying votes by actually forgiving people and bypassing the standards of the Constitution. It's one thing to say, yes, you can have bankruptcy and hold Congress accountable to say they must be bankruptcy must be available to them or it's available to no one. Fix this, Congress. He could have done that, but instead he's a tyrant. Instead, he's turned his back on the Constitution. And this, my friends, really lends to the season of what we've got. We're actually at a critical mass here. We're looking at Trump and Biden as, you know, the two polarized identities that, you know, people are going, are we going to allow the parties to actually throw us off the edge? I believe that a third party candidate who stands up and educates the United States, and actually in these types of sessions, I mean, I did this in, I think, 15, 16 sessions last year. Go read, look for in my podcast where I talked about what a constitutional president could do. And I could tell you again and again, I'm telling you, over that course of time, America would be presented with the information that anybody could actually take what I said and just embrace that information and make a campaign, create the narrative and put it out there and say, this is what I will do. And if not, hold me accountable and impeach me. And I'm here to tell you, folks, it'd be done. It would be done if we had a person of impeccable character that we elected to actually do what a constitutional president needs to do today. Wow. I mean, could you imagine the power of having a constitutional president? I'm not talking about, you know, this the vindictiveness back and forth between these two evil parties. I am here telling you every Friday, for the past few Fridays, how the parties have basically colluded and sold us out. We don't have a Republican form of government. We have a party form of government. And nobody wants to fix it. Everybody just wants to fight for their control and power. And what is it? At what expense? At our liberty and the Constitution itself. That's where we are. So don't tell me there's no hope. I see the hope. I see things happening in New York State. I've seen things happen in South Dakota last year where we actually convinced by petitioning the state legislature not to pass a digital currency bill. I've seen these things happen. And it's not because of me. It's not because of me, because a few people in South Dakota took a stand, because a few people in New York now are taking a stand. You know, my prayers and hearts and thoughts are with you and these people that want to take a stand. GR can't do it. The president could do it, but none of them will do it unless you actually have a candidate that will stand up and lead. But we don't have any candidates standing up and leading. I've called out. Where's the third party candidate that can actually lead on the Constitution? Because let him bring forth the lesson. Let him actually stand and be the last testament of whether this republic stands or not. But we don't have to bank faith in a single man. We can't do that because the God syndrome kicks in and we will actually elevate somebody to this God status. And there's nothing more disastrous than that. So I'm here to tell you that we have opportunities that are right in front of us. We have the opportunity to actually carpe diem, seize the day. But it's about learning, and you have to understand this little thing called the Constitution. Now, I can see I'm out of time. My first half of this show is gone. So, and you can tell, I'm really making a lot of money with all these advertisers and all the support I've got, right? I mean, at least there are institutions. I've been told the John Birch believe I'm getting rich, but the fact is, and actually, let me just put this out there. I would love to work with the John Birch Society. I tried and tried for 2 years. I've got emails. I've got all the evidence to prove all that. I have tried to work with other institutions and organizations. Those who are out actually to have a level of control and to make money, it's about serving mammon. That's the problem. And so the day's coming close where, you know, well, I don't have time. We're obviously going into a break. We will be back with how two parties have successfully ratcheted tyranny upon us. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
You know, I happen to know quite a few people that are part of my, I'll just say, spiritual ring and friends and so forth. And, you know, they all know that I do this for no money. And they all, I live in a very patriotic area, and they're patriots. They claim to be patriots. But the reality is, not one of them is willing to take the time to learn because, you know, it's more important that they just, you know, make a little bit more money to get their next toy. I don't mean to be judgmental, but it's disheartening to see so much of America, you know, worried and, you know, too many at the wit's end thinking that we're going to fail. And not understand really the source of the problem. Folks, the Constitution actually has our solutions. Now, as I was going into break, I do want to actually, I would love to sit down and have a really open and objective, not an offensive, you know, attacking each other kind of dialogue. What I'm looking for is an objective, open, and honest dialogue of what we need to do and how we need to move forward. I would love to have that conversation. I'd love to have it on video. I would, you know, just like the conversations at the Annapolis Convention when they were talking about how essential it would be to have a constitutional convention. Because I believe if we had another Annapolis Convention, I believe that the sentiments would be everybody would leave that meeting if they were honest and objective. If they were honest and objective, they would all take a stand. We would walk out and we would say, we must interpose. We must take a stand and force the federal government into compliance. And there's a way of doing that. And the one thing that nobody wants you to hear, nobody wants you to understand, is republic review. Republic review is, in essence, exactly what Thomas Jefferson and James Madison were doing. And how do we get there? Well, we actually have to turn our focus onto the counties. We have to start using petitions. We have to start demanding and chanting and creating a movement of demanding full compliance of the Constitution. I make it seem like, you know, it's really simple, and it really is that simple. But it's not something that happens in one day. You have to be committed, just like the people of Germany were committed to salvation in the 1500s, which is why they decided, after 10 years, they decided to break away and reform Christianity. I think we're well past that. I think there's plenty of people. I don't think it would take 10 years. I can honestly say it shouldn't even take 4 years if Americans were committed and willing to drink from the bitter cup of actually correcting our economy and correcting these problems. Don't tell me you're concerned about your kids owning a home, but you're not willing to fix the problem. You are a part of the problem.
If you're not engaged in the solution, you are a part of the problem, which is why I unequivocally state that all of these organizations, not just the John Birch Society, but the 10th Amendment Center, the parties, all of these organizations, Tactical Civics, they're all a part of the problem. They tell you they're a part of the solution, but nowhere do they have a map that actually gives you from a ground perspective, a strategy from your ground, your county, through your states, and forcing federal compliance to the Constitution. Not one of them can do that. And anybody that tells you, oh, the power of the common law grand jury, that cannot force the federal government into compliance. It requires the parties to do that. This is not GR telling you this. This is the brilliant man of Madison. James Madison stated all of this. This is why I have no problem whatsoever standing up and suffering any type of slings and arrows, because they can't hurt. Because it's not me. They're not striking me. They can't strike me. What Madison has stated is empirical fact, because it is founded in the tenets of contract law and the nature of constitutions. But nevertheless, let me return back to how the two parties have been working and colluding together over the history of this republic to take away your state's rights and your rights. As the more they take from the state, oh, but, you know, as they take it from the state, they give them money. Isn't that good? So there's an even exchange. The state gets money and they lose their rights. And you lose your rights. So last time we kind of talked about, and we're kind of coming to the end of this. This is why, you know, this would probably be the last episode for this. But we talked about how the federal government in 1953, with the good old duplicity of President Ike, how he established on his watch the Health, Education, and Welfare Departments. I ask you today, where is the most money being spent in America? Where are your tax dollars going for the most? Other than these boondoggles of, you know, the Build Back Better trillions that are actually being used to go back to the loyalists, you know, to pay for, you know, the deep pockets of those who are supporting to keep this corrupt government in action. Because that's what that is. That's what Obama did. Using this third party, or I should say this alternate power crap. That's a huge buyout in making America the most vulnerable nation in the world. You know why? I've actually told a few people, and there are people that listen to this that know what I'm saying, and they can't say a word because I've got them on an NDA. But the reason why they are giving us the least dependable grid and, you know, energy sources possible is because we sit in a dominance that no other nation in the world has the resources that we have, to where I've told you we have the resources and the ability to actually have subscription electricity, where you only pay a flat rate. You don't pay for how much you use. You're not penalized by how much you need because you have such a big family or a big house to, you know, take care of people or being productive and helping people out by employing them, having a business. Anyway. So the federal control over health, education, and welfare really became this evil arm umbrella that actually broke into two. Health and welfare became the Health and Human Services, and it is this maniacal body that is doing all sorts of social engineering ever since, right? I mean, what actually came out of this social engineering in the late 50s and early 60s? All happening underneath Eisenhower, or it was all being launched under Eisenhower's administration. So the next step was the federal establishment of protected classes and control over racism, which was this federal act called the Civil Rights Act. As honorable and as nice as it seems that we have the Civil Rights Act, that is something that the 14th Amendment already created, that no state can make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. We didn't need this act. We already had it in the 14th Amendment. But, oh, yes, that's right. The progressives have done everything they can to disparage that 14th Amendment. As a matter of fact, they did such a knockout job in denigrating the 14th Amendment that even conservatives are on board with it. In other words, we actually find people that consider themselves real constitutional conservatives, and they actually say disparaging things about the 14th Amendment because, well, that's how they've been taught. They don't question what they've been taught. I can't tell you how many people I've actually come across that said, you know, no, I know all about the 14th Amendment. And come to find out, they don't know anything about it. I would love, and you're hearing me make this plea, because I've asked, we've sent him a letter, we've actually sent him a few correspondences. I would love to have Kurt Lash, because Kurt Lash actually did, I think it was his thesis. It was a thesis paper regarding the Privileges and Immunities Clause within the 14th Amendment. And I have no idea who would be calling me now, but it's way out of reach, so we'll just have to leave it at that. Anyway, so the next step was the federal control over housing and the creation of the office and then the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Okay, so if you understand what they just did is they took control over the classes of people and now they started creating the EEOs. And just remember, it was Ronald Reagan who actually put the teeth into the EEO stuff. And actually started going after quotas and those types of things, making sure that everybody had equal opportunity. Government should not even be involved in that. Government should just make sure that no corporation is creating an advantage one way or the other. It's that simple. So, as we look at the control over housing, now they can give you a house. They can protect you. Or they can protect those who have no right of protection, the invaders that are coming into this country. You can't tell me that the insidiousness of housing and urban development isn't, you know, single-handedly creating. And you know what? Every builder I know really good men that claim to be men of God that are contractors, not one of them would be willing to actually strike out and stop and say, we got to get rid of all these invaders. Because they would know that they would be a major pause in their market space. They would not be able to make money. They wouldn't be able to build all of these homes, except for the elite. And all of a sudden, we will find, you know, who actually has solid foundations and who else, you know, or who's heavily vested in what I call the fiat currency, you know, whether that be the stock market or what have you. The fact is, even long before this, and I want to go back because I'm not sure I even covered this. Yeah, actually, I did cover it. In 1929, when the federal government under Hoover took and seized control over our stock markets. That's when they could start manipulating. And that's how, with the Federal Reserve and control over the stock market, they were able to run roughshod over our economy. And so, as we kind of look at, and I know it sounds like rough, anyway, I know I mispronounce it, but it's roughshod, and they're destroying our economy. And the next step that they took in 1966 was control over the Department of Transportation. Folks, it all started in 1817 when Congress tried to do that, when Congress tried to take control over the Department of Transportation. What ended up happening was Madison vetoed it. 1816, actually, and he vetoed it in 1817. And then Monroe vetoed it because he was the Secretary of State. Actually, he became the president, and that was Madison's last act. And he kind of showed Monroe, okay, I just vetoed this. So when Monroe saw something come up in 1822, he vetoed it as well. Said, we don't have the authority to do this Department of Transportation. So it took him that long to finally wait for the dust to settle, and they already assumed all of these other powers, and then boom, they stood up the Department of Transportation, and nobody blinked. This is why I always say, where is it in the conservative ranks where people are, you know, yammering and demanding a full shutdown? Because we have empirical data that they can't do it. We had three presidents veto congressional attempts of trying to create a Department of Transportation or the footings thereof. Not even creating the department, just an office. So the next step in getting America set up so that we could just actually be decimated economically and financially was the federal control over the fiat currency. We had to get completely removed from the exchangeability of a dollar to gold and silver. Any guesses who did that? That was Nixon. And that was in 1971. Nixon completely removed, not just took us off the gold standard. Actually, FDR did that. But he took off and took away the exchangeability of any currency that you could take in and exchange for gold or silver. So in other words, the gold notes, I believe FDR took us off the gold standard, and then Nixon basically closed the door on silver because there were silver notes. And I believe Kennedy, people say that that's why he was assassinated. I think there was it was far more than just that. But bottom line, it was Nixon that actually stepped into that. Now, between 1971 and 2001, where the federal government actually began creating just wholesale America is for sale, there was all sorts of new ratchetings. As a matter of fact, the first thing that the federal government did after 1971 that was really setting us up, because it goes into our educational system, they created the Department of Education. And also they created another tyrannical, I will just say, like the empirical force, like the, you know, the, what do they call those guys? The Emperor's Guard, whatever, the EPA. So the EPA was created in the 1970s, and so was the Department of Education and one other department. And as they seize control of these things, now they had their grubby little mitts around the majority of our economy. They already had health and education, but education became a focus. The EPA became a focus, and energy. Carter gave us the Department of Energy. And as they started creating and expanding, as a matter of fact, I want to remind you, go back and look at Ronald Reagan's campaign of 1980. Most people, anybody that looked at Ronald Reagan as this righteous man, that he was an impeccable president, his campaign, he ran his campaign on promising to shut down the Department of Energy because that's how maniacal that department is. But he didn't do it. I mean, we know he became president. How come he didn't fulfill his campaign promise? You know, wasn't Trump the one that was going to repeal and replace? Or no, he was actually going to do away with. It became repeal and replace once he got elected. You're telling me that regardless of, you know, your feelings, that Trump is really the great president that you make him out to be. Now, he's not nearly as bad, but he's definitely a nationalist, and nationalism has got to go. We have to actually become the advocates of liberty. We've got to basically take the biggest swipe we can at nationalism by getting rid of the UN, by basically no longer being involved in these alliances and allowing nations to start deciding for themselves. Do they want to join the Union and end war? Or do they want to, you know, play these games of world war and intrigue and that crap? Because if they're going to do that, then they're on their own. We have the ability to defend ourselves. One thing that we have proven is we can do that. We can't do it if we capitulate. We don't have to capitulate if we correct ourselves. And we won't capitulate if we correct ourselves. There's way too many kids today. As a matter of fact, I heard this study that it's something like 20 or 30% of the kids today embrace or want to be a part of either socialism or communism. 7% of the kids in school today are wanting to live in a communist nation. You understand what I just said? 7%, that's way too high. They should not even be citizens if they feel that way. Anyway, so what happened in 2001 with the Patriot Act? I mean, we needed to be attacked so that we could finally justify this legislation that was boiling and percolating in the 1990s. Under Clinton wanted to seize control of banks and all these other things. And if you go and do the due diligence, you'll find that they actually did have something like a Patriot Act. They wanted to monitor, you know, bank transactions, any transaction over $10,000, or any person that receives $10,000 in cash, they have to report that to the federal government. That was all happening in the 1990s. The Democrats were trying to do that, and the Republicans weren't going to have any part of that. And here what ends up happening is we get attacked. And by the way, write this down, Operation Bajinka and Able Danger. Those two things, go do the research. Now, I remember when I was researching this stuff, I got really bit in the hand when I was using the Wild Wild West and doing that research late at night. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's just a bad memory for me. But bottom line, when we look at what ended up coming out of the Patriot Act, this is where the federal government seized control, what they believe was legitimate control of allowing America to be sold and the buying out of America. Because even though they may have allowed minor investments and these types of things, they had finally broke the ice, and slowly but surely they started implementing plans of allowing China to buy up your farmland, allowing all of these nations to literally seize control over America, where nowhere in the Constitution do they have the authority to do that. Nowhere in any state constitution does your state have the authority to do that. This all started happening on people making compromises between states and between federal government and states. I'm here to tell you, folks, that no foreign person has a legal right to own any American resource. None. It's not there. Now, can Americans have, you know, businesses in other countries? Well, yeah, you can, because those other countries allow that. But we have no authority to allow any foreign entity to operate within the United States. As a matter of fact, our federal government is obligated to protect the sovereignty of each of the states. They can't be invaded economically. They can't be invaded culturally by, you know, people running across our southern border or people with open wallets ready to buy up everything. That can't happen here. The Constitution doesn't let it. But we, because we don't understand that one little document, well, I guess we'll have to let it happen. They're letting it happen, so we'll have to let it happen. If you take a stand, then, and we all start taking a stand, then that changes everything. But are you really willing to, you know, let your children never own a home again? And are you willing to lose the ownership of your own home? Because that's what's going to happen. Property rights and even individual life is going to be up for grabs. And the next tyrants that are in control, it will be up to them to determine whether you live or die. It will be up to them to determine whether you can, you know, you're permitted to use this property anymore, because you won't own anything other than maybe your car. You'll be lucky to own a car. You know, just like in Russia, you can have a car. But they can come and take that from you. They can take and seize everything from you. There is no document that protects you on the face of the earth that protects your private property. Oh, no. I'm sorry. There is one document that protects private property. And that's the Constitution. And it's the Fifth Amendment. That no private property can be seized and taken without just compensation for public use. So we actually have something that actually protects us in any and every way. And that's okay. Just let it become and maintain this mystery in your life, because as long as the Constitution is a mystery in your life, then, you know, ignorance is bliss. I mean, you can worry about what's going to happen, but don't worry. Things are just going to happen anyway. You can't stop it, but you can. And I'm here to tell you, you can. You have to unite. We have to unite on the Constitution. And it's really hard to do that when we have actual organizations that tell you, trust us, trust us, trust us. Give us money. Give us money. Just pay to be a part of this. It doesn't cost anything to reclaim your republic. It doesn't cost anything to reclaim your dignity, to take a stand and say, no more. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to allow this anymore. It's so divine, and yet it's all lost. I don't know. Maybe it's just because so few people go to church anymore. I don't know. But I do know that we have everything we need to turn this nation around. The danger of unconstitutional and benign legislation like the Community Reinvestment Act, the EEO, and the Equal Housing, those types of acts out there have just absolutely been so destructive because we've allowed ourselves to swim in the political waters of division. We have allowed ourselves to embrace tyranny and unconstitutional government. This is a fool's errand. And as I've said before, I look at our Constitution and our involvement in this process like the human body's immune system. It works when every cell is communicating and working together, united on maintaining a pure and clean body. That when a cell gets, you know, what do you want to call that? cut, damaged, a virus hits it or gets impaled, whatever, that cell communicates and says, hey, this is a bad thing's happening to me. And that cell may die, but the rest of the cells will rebuild and actually they will fight to get that out of them. Now, we can't necessarily remove, you know, metal from us or, you know, we actually have to have a little bit of help. The human body does. But our government, our system, this immune system that our government has under this Constitution, we have all the help we need. We have all the help we need. We just need to take a stand, and we need to demand, unite and demand on full compliance of the Constitution with every public servant, because every public servant is our government. It's not the buildings. It's not the guns. It is our public servants. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic. And we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.